اهلا يا شهر رمضان شرفنا بلا استئذان، اهلا يا شهر رمضان شرفنا بلا استئذان، بلك باب القلب مفتوح اهلا يا زكاة الروح، بلك باب القلب مفتوح اهلا يا زكاة الروح، اهلا يا شهر رمضان.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد والثناء لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening and the return of our Imam, please recite a salawat. So we said, inshallah, over the course of the next, from tonight it will be 7 nights, we will be discussing the history of the life of Amir al-Mu'mineen during the 5 years of government. These are very key years, very important years of the life of Amir al-Mu'mineen, and there are plenty of lessons to take from this history. And hopefully we're going to try to extract whatever lessons that we can from this history. The objective of going over that history is to extract these lessons. And the month of Ramadan being the month of the Shahada of the Imam, this period and covering it and learning from it becomes extra important, as this period is actually what is leading to the Shahada of Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi. We said a salawat, please. Seems like some serious moving is going on upstairs. I don't know if you guys can hear me right. I'm having trouble hearing myself. Recite a salawat, please. So yesterday we talked about the revolution against the third Khalifa, against Uthman. And we spoke about some of the components, some of those who were part of this, and the various stances they had towards this incident, who was participating against Uthman, what the forces were that were actually leading the revolution. And we said that the ones that actually started the revolution against Uthman were pious companions of the Holy Prophet, or students of the companions of the Holy Prophet. Pious people that had a problem with the way things were being run. They had a problem with the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet in various ways were not being implemented. They had been changed. This Khalifa of the Holy Prophet that is supposed to be carrying on with what the Holy Prophet has taught, they are supposed to be representing the Holy Prophet. Instead of going through and doing what the Holy Prophet had said, they changed things. They had a problem with this. It was from Egypt, some of the companions of the Holy Prophet. From Kufa, you had certain individuals. From Basra, you had certain individuals. This was the motive, this was the reason, and these were the people involved. Amir al-Mu'mineen didn't have a problem with their revolution against the third Khalifa, meaning them coming forward, coming to Medina, expressing their concerns, talking about things needing to change. All of that is fine. Amir al-Mu'mineen is absolutely fine with that. In fact, he mediates, he goes to Uthman, he's already said these things. It's not like Amir al-Mu'mineen hasn't done this. It's not like he hasn't spoken about this, now all of a sudden these people are speaking about it. He had raised concerns. He had spoken to Uthman. He had spoken to the previous Khalifa. But there wasn't much, especially with the third Khalifa, there wasn't much success in getting him to change his ways. Now that there's pressure mounting because there's a public uprising, there's a time where it's only one influential figure like Amir al-Mu'mineen saying something. It's another thing where you have people gathering, speaking to the various companions of the Holy Prophet, the entire city of Medina being against Uthman. That becomes a little more difficult to handle. And especially since this time, these people are pretty upset. Some of them may start doing things that are not too similar to what Amir al-Mu'mineen did. And that's exactly what happened. Meaning the violence that occurred at that time, Amir al-Mu'mineen was not in favor of it. He told the revolutionaries that you don't do this. Don't move towards killing him. Don't cut off the water from his house. This is what Amir al-Mu'mineen said. Some of these people, so when you have a rebellion, a public uprising, some of the people that are leading it may be good people, but then there are others that get involved. And others may not have all those good intentions. They cut off the water. It wasn't Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr that cut off the water. Others cut off the water. All right. So we explained that. I'm not going to recap and go over all of what we mentioned yesterday. You have the revolutionaries, you have Amir al-Mu'mineen. We talked about Uthman. There was one last point about that revolution that we said we're going to be explaining tonight. And that is the role of Muawiyah. What did Muawiyah have to do with this? Was Muawiyah involved in any way in this? Did Muawiyah have an active role? Or was he just on the borderlines and he wasn't really involved in any way? There's a few things that we read in history. Before I give you some of those clues, we have to understand, just like today, we have an approach that is a very naive approach. We expect the administration to come and tell us that we're going into Iraq because of oil. Okay. We expect that the administration comes and tells us something like that. When the administration says we want to take democracy to Iraq, we're not able to see that that's not actually what they're trying to do. They'll say one thing, but what they're actually intending is something very different. With Muawiyah, similarly, what you read in history about what he said, okay, is one thing, his stances is one thing, but you have to read all of what he has done before and after this incident, who, or his family members, his track record, his past, his history, what his role, his father's role in Mecca was, what he did after this incident, and then with all of that, understanding the character of Muawiyah, and then read some of the things that have been said and quoted of him in this whole scene. There's a couple of things that we know. Number one, he was fully aware of what was happening. Meaning, he was fully aware that the people had, or they were fed up with the type of behavior that the third Khalifa has. When the rebellion started, we said that the first rebellion started in Kufa. They rejected the governor of Uthman in Kufa. And so the rebellion started there. When that started, Uthman called over all of his governors, especially those who were closer to him, including Muawiyah. And they had conversations about how to deal with this. The outcome was not a very good outcome. The solutions they came up with how to deal with this was not very positive. They basically made things worse. But the idea is Muawiyah was there before people from Egypt came. They knew that this type of rebellion is gaining momentum. More people are gaining or joining this. More people are becoming part of this rebellion, this revolt against the government. Muawiyah completely knew this from beforehand. Second thing we know is that Muawiyah was actually called upon when the people from Egypt came over, and Muawiyah sent an army. Muawiyah sent an army outside of Medina, and his words are, you go over there, you stay there, but you don't enter the city until I tell you. You go there, they are there, they are there, but they don't enter the city unless Muawiyah tells them. So this might seem like he's supporting Uthman, because we're going to see. My understanding is Muawiyah didn't really want Uthman to live through this. Okay. Muawiyah actually was pretty fine with Uthman getting killed, because he had his own agenda. Muawiyah was trying to gain power. Muawiyah was trying to become that Khalifa. That was his agenda. And he's seeing things are moving in that direction. Out of all the regions of the Islamic Empire, as they call it, not in the negative sense of the word, but the Islamic government, that larger country that the Muslims had, with all the power that they had, all the riches that they had, out of all of those regions that were controlled by the Khalifa, it was Sham under the control of Muawiyah that was absolutely fine. They didn't have any issue with Uthman. Kufa and Basra, these two major areas, they had serious issues. In Egypt, that's another very important region, they have serious issues. The only other serious region that you have is Sham, and they're absolutely fine with the third Khalifa. So he's got them under control. He brings an army outside of Medina and tells them not to go in. If you want to help Uthman, why not go in? Why not take your people in? He tells them to stay out there. You know what this did? You know what this did? They say, some of the historians have concluded this, because the people that came from Egypt, they didn't come there to kill Uthman. They came there to fix things up. And when he showed that he didn't have any firm will, any willingness to actually change, then they started stepping up the pressure on Uthman. But still, they didn't have a plan in killing Uthman. Why did this happen then? Some have said that when Muawiyah sent the army and the news got around, this created commotion. They were thinking, okay, we are 600 people from Sham. These are a few thousand people, the army. We're here to do something, and these people are going to come in, destroy us. We're not going to be able to accomplish anything. We have to do something about this. And this gradually led some people to come up with the notion that we need to actually go in. And they went in and killed Uthman. And of course, the way Uthman was killed, according to at least some accounts, it doesn't seem to have been an active effort to actually kill him. It seems, according to some of the accounts, that it was sort of a mistake. I'm saying all of this because Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, did not... He didn't bother with those who engaged in the death of, and the killing of Uthman. He had nothing to do. He did not try to, as they say, bring them to justice. That was one of the demands that was being made. Bring those people to justice. I mean, when he had nothing to do with them. So there's various notions why. If this was a Muslim, okay, regardless of whatever he's done, if he is a Muslim, unless he's committed one of those crimes that deserves death, and has the death penalty, then if somebody kills him, then there's got to be something that's going to be done. Okay. So why? There's various notions. One of the notions can be this, that it's not even clear that it was done intentionally. Right. But the point is, the death of Uthman, based on this analysis, the death of Uthman was because of the army that was sent by Muawiyah. If that army wasn't there, these people would not have felt intimidated and would not have taken this action to kill Uthman, despite Amir al-Mu'mineen telling them you shouldn't be moving in that direction. Alright. This is a theory. I can't give you actual wording from Muawiyah saying, yes, I wanted Uthman to get killed. But when you see this type of behavior, when you see he was completely aware, his army was out there, they had no issue with going in to save Uthman, and then right after Uthman dies, he makes this an issue and uses it as an excuse to fight Amir al-Mu'mineen, you're thinking, okay, there's something wrong here. There is something wrong in this picture. It can't be that he's genuinely really looking for, you know, Uthman's killer to be brought to justice, you can't really think that that is going to be what the motive, what the intention of Muawiyah is. And there's plenty of clues that are going to come after this about that. We will see, inshallah. But right now, I just wanted to put those clues together. And I want to draw a conclusion here. We want to learn things from this history. We don't want to just put this forth and learn about history. We want to learn it for today as well. We had people that were naive then. We have people that are naive today. Okay. You have enemies that are plotting and planning without their name being all over it, having something happen, fighting against the believers, trying to pressure the believers, but they do it in a way where it's hidden, right? Certain believers that follow the path of Amir al-Mu'mineen look at that, they put the clues together, and like, I don't need their name to be all over it. I can gather that, no, they did this. It's them. They are behind it. They're the ones that are responsible. The enemies are the ones that did this. It's not someone just, you know, accidentally actually doing something. It's very interesting. One example came to my mind right now as I'm speaking, because it was put in the news. And if we draw a parallel between two instances of something very similar happening and how it is portrayed, I hope some of you at least are aware of these two instances. One of them, I'm pretty sure you guys heard of, the in the Ukraine crises that are going on between Russia and the West. One of the things that happened was that an airliner was shot down. Okay, and that became a serious issue, and they blamed it on the Russians. Russians or pro-Russian forces in Ukraine shot down the plane. That became something that they used in the media to paint a very negative image of Russia. The Russians are these brutal, inhuman people that do this type of work. They're the ones that are causing all the problems in Ukraine. All right. So I don't want to get into that, whether or not the Russians were behind it or actually the Westerners were behind that. I don't want to get into that. What I want to take from that is the Americans said that this was very wrong. They blamed the Russians, and they said the Russians did this, and this is just unacceptable. Okay, you have a war between two parties. You don't shoot down airliners filled with passengers, civilians, innocent people that have absolutely nothing to do with the conflict on the ground. Okay, but a very similar incident happened in the Persian Gulf. Okay, a very similar incident happened in the Persian Gulf. It was shot down very clearly by an American warship. And they said in the media that, oh, it was an accident. They thought this was an F-16 or whatever, F-14, F-16, whatever it was they thought it was. I think it should be an F-14 because the Iranians, I think they didn't have the F-16s. Anyhow, They said it was a mistake, it was an accident. People look at the media, yeah. Imam Khomeini says that they did this intentionally. Believers over there say that they did this intentionally. They rewarded the captain of the ship later on. All these are clues. Some people are like, no, they apologize. Well, actually, they didn't even really apologize either. But it's said that they said it's a mistake. Yeah. Something that easily to identify. And you have some believers that fall for it. Look, the enemies are going to plot, various enemies, the shaitan, personal enemies. All of us have to deal with the shaitan. Shaitan comes in ways that he tries to trick you in thinking what you're doing is actually good for you. We have plenty of verses in the Holy Quran about this. زَيَّنَ لَهُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ أَعْمَالَهُمْ. Shaitan makes your actions look good to you. He's your enemy, whispering to you, making you feel that what you're doing is right. What you're doing is absolutely wrong. But you're not realizing that Shaitan is making you do this. And sometimes his tricks are very complicated. I recently came across this. I've said this in a couple other lectures as well. It's very, very sort of scary. Okay, I don't want to scare us. I just want to give us more awareness so that we're more careful on the inner or the shaitan that whispers in our ears and the shayateen that are human shayateen. They make things sound as though they're a complete. It's a completely different picture. They make us feel like they're friends. They make us feel like they're not doing anything wrong. It says that sometimes shaitan comes in, he makes you remember a worship of Allah, to worship, a worship of Allah that is actually a very, very good worship, very beneficial, better than many other acts, right? But why does he make you remember that to do it? Because you're actually doing something that in itself, it's shorter, it's less than this other worship, right? But you are continuing it. Continuity itself is very, very important. If you want something to be effective, we have hadith. And logic works with this as well. قَلِيلٌ يَدُمْ. Do something small but continuous. Read Quran 10 minutes a day, but do it 10 minutes a day. Don't say, oh, I need to do one juz. Do one page a day. Sometimes people don't recite Quran on a regular basis. Oh, it takes a lot of time. One page, how long does that take? Just do one page, a small amount, but continue it every day. Okay? Every day, a little bit every day. That's what you need. So you're doing something, you've continued that shaitan has tried to get you off of it. He's tried various things, whether it's video games, your work, your whatever it is, movies, something. He's tried all of that, it doesn't work. Okay? His last trick is this. He's going to remind you of a better worship. Okay? Better worship. You're thinking that, okay, this is good. Let me do this instead of one page of Quran. You do that instead of one page of Quran. Okay? Next day you're thinking, oh, should I do this again or not? Should I continue with that? You broke that continuity. Okay? That's what he wanted to do. He wanted you to break that continuity. It's a good worship, but his intention is to get you off of it. You were continuing, you were doing good, one page a day. A worship is being mentioned to you, whispered to you. You think it's a worship, it's divine, it's good. But no, he does that in order that you stop that small act that you have continued it for such a long time. Okay. Shayateen come in various ways and they try to trick us. We have to make sure we're aware, we're vigilant, careful, thoughtful, looking out who the enemies are and what they're trying to do. Sometimes some of the things that happen in communities, you'll see someone, this is not necessarily, you know, some FBI or any of that. No, it's the shayateen that is with us, because we don't need the FBI to come and do this. Shaytan is looking to fragment communities. When he sees people coming together, he hates that. Believers come together, move in the right direction, he hates that. It's very clear. The verse of the Quran says, اعتصموا بحبل الله جميعا ولا تفرقوا. He wants تفرق. Don't fragment, don't separate, don't. But Shaytan wants that because that's how he gets us to move in the wrong direction. Something happens, we make a big deal of it in the community. And it's something, yeah, it could be a faqih issue. Could be a faqih issue. Some imam, some scholar, he did this little thing wrong. Okay, that's an issue, yeah. And you're thinking, oh my God, I have to save the prayers of everyone. Okay. Everyone's prayers are now ruined. I gotta mention this and make this a point. Tell everybody this is what just happened. No, you don't need to save the prayers of everyone like that. People thought their prayers okay, it's actually fine. Go read your fiqh right, okay? It's shaitan that's getting you to say that out loud to get people off of a particular scholar, to get people to feel negatively about a certain person. No. Yes, go whisper to them, I think you did this. Okay, at some other time. Whatever is going to cause that fragmentation, whatever causes that disunity, you know, keep it down. There's various other things that are done to keep us disunited within the Shia community, within the larger Muslim community. These are various tricks that are played. So one lesson we take from that is that the enemies, whether it's the shaitan that's whispering in our ears, it's the enemies of Islam trying to plot against the Muslimin in various locations on this earth, they plan things in ways that are not obvious and they're not visible. We have to be more conscious. We have to be more vigilant. We have to be more thoughtful. We have to see the plots, the tricks, and make sure we identify this is coming from the enemy. Otherwise, we're going to fall for it. So this is from yesterday. I want to talk about next the bay'ah of the people with Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, and what happened right after that. Amir al-Mu'mineen wasn't for the killing of Uthman, obviously. I've already said that a number of times. And he had, according to some accounts, even left the city. According to other accounts, he had initially left the city, and some say it was upon the request of Uthman. But then after this continued for a longer period of time, he came back to the city, but he had nothing to do with what was going on. He didn't take the side of Uthman because he'd already told him what you're doing is wrong, and he wasn't willing to correct his behavior. And he had told the revolutionaries what he disagrees with. Again, they were not following his instructions. He wanted to make sure none of what happens is blamed on him, because he had nothing to do with either one. He didn't have any influence on either party. He said, okay, if I don't have an influence, I cannot make anything change. And so I'm going to make sure that I'm not blamed for any of this. And that was seen very evidently in Medina. Everyone knew Ali had nothing to do with this. And this is going to be an important point we're going to see in the Battle of Jamal. But after they killed Uthman, they brought that news to Amir al-Mu'mineen, and that same day some people came forward and they started talking about the Khilafah of Amir al-Mu'mineen, pledging allegiance with Amir al-Mu'mineen. Various things happened, okay? Talha, Zubayr had left the city, he came back. Talha is there, Zubayr is there, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas is there, others are there, people went to them. Some were suggesting that you amongst yourself choose something similar to the shura that happened after the second Khalifa. Some suggested that. But what we see is that the masses started chanting that no, we will not accept anyone except Ali. Okay. Ali is the one we're okay with. How that happened, why did the people at this point, all in Medina at least, chant that? Everyone wanted this. They didn't leave it up to a shura. They weren't confused about it. Even when people suggested other names, even when people suggested to go to the shura, the masses said, no, we don't want this. We want Ali and only Ali. Okay. Why did this happen? There are various elements that are involved in that. I don't want to focus on that too much. Part of it has to do with the role that Amir al-Mu'mineen played in these 25 years. As I said earlier, the notion that Amir al-Mu'mineen was marginalized and he remained marginalized. He accepted that and he had nothing to do with anything. That wasn't the case. The track record was that Ali was always on the right tracks and he made his opinion public. People saw that he's supporting a just view. He's supporting the view of the Holy Prophet and explaining that, and others are not conforming with that. That was the track record for 25 years. So he is a well-known figure in the community, a figure that is known as someone who knows better in that whole incident of the rebellion and the revolution against Uthman. Again, this displayed itself, where people went to him, sought advice from him. He became the mediation, he mediated between the people and Uthman, and everyone saw that his opinion is the right opinion. So all of that, plus more, the role of some of the companions like Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, some of the other companions that also mentioned the name of Amir al-Mu'mineen, like Ammar ibn Yasir and others, all of that had to do with this at this point. But the end result was that people were pretty clear in Medina that they wanted Ali. Okay. You have the issue of the bay'ah. The way Amir al-Mu'mineen deals with this is important, and we have to analyze this. They come to Amir al-Mu'mineen, they say this, they say, "We want you to rule." He says a few words, he says, "No, it's best that you don't do this. Go choose someone from amongst yourself." Amir al-Mu'mineen is serious about this, okay? So Amir al-Mu'mineen is sort of knowing that they're going to come back, and he's not honest about this. He's not sincere about this. He actually wants them to come and elect him or appoint him or pledge allegiance to him, and he's just telling them, "No, I don't want you to do that." No, he's pretty serious. "You don't want me to do this. Okay? You don't want me to do this. Go find someone else. I will be their advisor. I will play the same role that I have been playing all these 25 years. It's better. And I do better with the Khalifa. I'm more inclined towards following what the governor says. I'm not so at least violent against the teachings and the instructions of the Khalifa." And that's what Amir al-Mu'mineen was during Uthman's time. He didn't do what the revolutionaries did. He didn't even, not only did he not order it, he didn't even approve of it. So he said, "You guys do that." And they insisted. He said, "Look, if I do this, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to do it the sunnah of the Holy Prophet. I'm not going to do it differently." They said, "We want it." He said, "Okay, if you want it, tomorrow. Tomorrow." It seems like he wanted to give them a second chance or a third chance. Think this over. Think this over. Tomorrow they came with larger numbers and they pledged allegiance to Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, in a way that the descriptions are, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, "I was afraid that my two sons, older sons, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, are going to be run over by people." It was like a stampede. That's how many people were coming and how much pressure was there, physical even. All these people came over and they insisted, it's Ali, and they all willingly pledge allegiance to Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi. So when you look at this picture, and let me compare this to the events that took place after the demise of the Holy Prophet. Okay. Amir al-Mu'mineen after the demise of the Holy Prophet was the Khalifa of the Holy Prophet. But people didn't come forward to pledge allegiance. He took his steps. He went to the doors of the Ansar. He tried to gather 40 people's support. And if that would have happened, then they would have fought for it. The Holy Prophet had told him, "If you get that support, then you're going to fight for this. If not, you're not going to do it." People didn't pledge allegiance. Even 40 people didn't come forward and remind people of an allegiance that was already pledged. You didn't even have that. You had only a few individuals that were supportive of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Only a few individuals. At that point, when he didn't have public support, Amir al-Mu'mineen didn't push forward. He didn't say that the Holy Prophet has made me the Khalifa. All right, we know this, right? Amir al-Mu'mineen is the Imam, whether people accept him or not. People's acceptance or the lack of acceptance doesn't change the fact that he is the Imam. He is the Khalifa. But he didn't take it. And then now, at this time, when people are coming and telling him, "Look, we want to pledge allegiance," he says, no, he pushes them away. Only when they insist, all of them insist, he accepts it and he becomes the governor. So during 25 years, Amir al-Mu'mineen does not take any step towards establishing the government. This might seem, according to some, to be something similar to a democracy, right? People voted for him. When people elected him, he accepted. When people didn't, he didn't accept it. It might seem as such, and some people really like that idea. Okay, of course, I've seen some people take it to an extreme. I heard something I could not believe my ears. A supposedly Shia scholar, who was a Sayyid as well, He said the reason why the Holy Prophet appointed Amir al-Mu'mineen as the ruler is because people were not mature enough. If he was in this day and age, he would have left it to an election. Okay. People will choose. People choose who the Imam is going to be. Do we agree with this? What is this concept of bay'ah? What is it with this bay'ah that when people gave him the bay'ah, he took it upon himself? And he fought for it as well, didn't he? As soon as people pledged their allegiance, soon after, some of the same people started going against it. Alright? If it was today, they would probably call for a referendum. Okay. We want a referendum. Yeah, we voted you in, but we didn't know you were going to do this. Let's call for a referendum. So people who voted you in are now saying, we retract that. We're not okay with this. But he fought. People lost their lives. What is it with bay'ah? Okay. Now this is a very important and very in-depth discussion that we're not going to be able to complete in this one session. And we don't plan on continuing with it. I want to give a few bullet points about this. Okay, just a few bullet points for those who want to follow up with this to think about it further, maybe find some literature and read on it. What is the objective of bay'ah? Does bay'ah cause, or does bay'ah give legitimacy to the government of a person? In which case we would say, first Khalifa got the bay'ah. Okay. Does it not give legitimacy? Okay. Why didn't Amir al-Mu'mineen do anything until there was bay'ah? What is this all about? Recite the salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
One thing which is obvious, all of you know, and I've already stated, is that the bay'ah doesn't legitimize a government. If everyone in the world comes and says this person is supposed to be the ruler, and the person is not a qualified person, the vote of all these people is not going to make that person qualified. Okay. That vote will not qualify a person. The vote doesn't make things. The vote is supposed to be identifying a qualified person, not making a qualified person. What is the role of bay'ah? The role of bay'ah, brothers and sisters in Islam, is founded in a very important concept that is relevant to us today, although we don't have the concept of bay'ah, at least here, or maybe a lot of us don't see it. But it has to do with something that is very relevant to us. You know what bay'ah is? Bay'ah started from the time of the Prophet. There was a bay'ah that was made in or outside of Mecca. The people of Medina came and pledged their bay'ah to the Holy Prophet. They said, we will support you. Your life is before ours. We will sacrifice our life for you. Our money is for your cause. We will sacrifice our money, everything. You are the Prophet of God. Whatever you say, we will sacrifice everything for you. That was the bay'ah that was given to the Holy Prophet. Based on the second bay'ah, the Holy Prophet moved to Medina. There's a bay'ah that is there. So it started during the time of the Holy Prophet. You hear about the bay'ah of the people with Amir al-Mu'mineen in Ghadir. Some of the accounts say, this is not all the accounts, some of the accounts say that in Ghadir, the Holy Prophet didn't suffice by just holding the hand of Ali ibn Abi Talib up and saying, "Man kuntu mawla fa hadha Aliun mawla." He said after that, people need to come and say salam to him bi imratil muslimin. In other words, they need to refer to him as Amir al-Mu'mineen. As-salamu alayk ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. Not as-salamu alayk ya Ali. As-salamu alayk ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. Okay, why? Because they're accepting his imara, his government. Him as the ruler. That's what that was supposed to be. And some even say that there was a more active form of bay'ah, where even the women were told to come into a tent. There was a container of water. Amir al-Mu'mineen had his right hand in it. Women would come, because they can't shake hands obviously. They would come and put their hands in that same container of water, their right hand. That was their form of bay'ah. For men it was shaking hands. For the women it was putting their hands in that water with Amir al-Mu'mineen. So it's very serious. Bay'ah is there. What is the objective of this bay'ah? The objective of the bay'ah, brothers and sisters, is a willing attempt to support the Islamic government or the Islamic cause. Let me elaborate on that. The Holy Prophet didn't want people to come forward and support his movement without understanding what they're actually doing. Okay. He didn't do that. He told them, look, this is going to mean trouble. This is about enemies wanting to kill you, wanting to kill the cause, and they're going to come forward. You accepting me as the Prophet, as your leader, is going to mean all of that. Are you willing to do this? And they pledge allegiance. They say, yes, we are. So they know what it is. Their allegiance, their bay'ah, is saying, we are with you. Okay, this is the first thing that needs to be said. Amir al-Mu'mineen explains, look, my way of government is the way the Holy Prophet did it. I'm not going to be giving extra privileges to anyone. Any money that's been given outside of the boundaries of the teachings of the Prophet, it will be returned. It doesn't matter what you've done with it. Make sure you're pledging allegiance, understanding what you're doing. Okay? It's not like some of the politicians that they say, oh, I'm going to do this, but they know from before that they're not going to do that. We're going to close Guantanamo, but we're not going to do that. Okay? That's just to bring votes. Okay? You vote for a person, then they're going to do something completely different. Okay? No. You explain what you're actually going to do. This is one way of government. Are you willing to do this? People need to know that and come into it voluntarily. They need to approve of this and want to be part of it. The next thing about bay'ah, which is the more important part of it, is that bay'ah means participation. Okay. There's a principle we have in Islam. It's a principle, a very important principle. Some of you have heard this. There's a verse in the Holy Quran that is usually referenced for this. That it says, God does not change for a people anything unless they change, a people, collectively, not individuals within a community or a society. People. Okay. In the Islamic school of thought, the Holy Prophet's view, his teachings, the government with the participation of people is going to help with this society moving towards prosperity. Okay. The Islamic movement in all stages of it, including when it's reached a stage where it has government, the Islamic movement requires the participation of the people in order to be successful. If people don't want it, not that it's not the right thing, but Islam says you're not going to get the results. It's only when people participate that you're going to get the results. The bay'ah is the participation of people. Okay. If Amir al-Mu'mineen would have taken out his dhul-faqar, who could have stood up against the dhul-faqar of Amir al-Mu'mineen? Yes, that's true. But that would be Ali doing that, not the people doing it. That doesn't bring victory and success. That doesn't bring what Amir al-Mu'mineen wants for these people. People have to choose the right thing to get prosperity. If you don't want to choose it, you're not going to get it. Very simple. You have to choose it. This bay'ah is you're being presented. Are you willing to be part of this? You say yes. That's the first step. That means you are coming forward to participate. See, I'll draw another comparison between the elections here, or especially here, but in other parts of the world as well. Look, when you participate in the voting process, you're not really participating in the decisions that are made for this country. Okay, you give your vote, and you wait for another 4 years before you go and vote again. What happens during this time? You barely follow it up. Okay? And the only thing that you do at best is if you're unhappy with some of the things, you just express to your friends that you're unhappy about it. That's not participating in the political system. That's not participation in the progress and the prosperity of the country. Participation is if there's something, if this starts moving in the wrong direction, then you actually actively change that. Right? Voting has its similarities to bay'ah, but it's drastically different. The Islamic notion of bay'ah is that I'm saying I'm part of this. That means I'm going to support this system. I don't stand outside of this and say, okay, we voted you in, you go do this. The way Bani Israel said to their prophet, right? Their prophet told them, this is another good example, public people's participation. Musa is someone that his cane opened up the seas. Okay? Okay. You can imagine what that is going to do. You take that cane, you don't have to be too strong. Musa was pretty strong as well. He punched the guy and he died. Okay? With this cane, you don't even need to hit the guy hard. Right? If it's divine, God can destroy a people. Command came, people, go to the Holy Land. Fight these tyrants. Right? Bani Israel said, you go with your Lord and fight. You go with your Lord and fight. We don't want to participate. Prophet said, it doesn't work like that. You have to come forward. If you come forward, God is going to grant you victory. If you don't come forward, not that God can't, God can. But that's not going to lead to your prosperity. You have to choose this. You have to participate. This is very important, brothers and sisters. Are we participating in the Islamic movement here? Are we participating in the community activities? Or are we like, okay, we participated in the general elections, we voted this board in or whatever, they have to do it, and we sit back, we just say, you did this wrong, you did that wrong, you did this wrong, you did that wrong. Where's your participation? Are you actually participating? In various ways. The funding is one thing, but that's not the only way. Are you putting time on this? What's your share of this? In a center, in the larger scheme of things, in the community, the Houston community, the community of believers in the United States, in North America, what's our participation? Bay'ah means participation, brothers and sisters. Okay? Bay'ah is the first step towards participation. You are saying that I am part of this. Amir al-Mu'mineen is saying, this is what I want to do. Are you guys part of this? That's why he got them to come in and support. The people had to come in. So this is with regards to the bay'ah of Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi. There's a couple other things that I wanted to discuss, but we're already 10:43, and I think it's going to be taking too long if I want to get into those other two points. We wanted to talk about, and we're going to continue this, we want to talk about what the approach taken by some of the companions of the Holy Prophet were after this bay'ah, and more particularly what Muawiyah did, some of his tricks, some of the things that started after the bay'ah. Inshallah, we're going to continue that tomorrow night. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless us with the appearance of the Imam of our time. We ask Allah to bless us with the ability of being His true and close companions. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to protect those that are putting their lives on the line, to protect Islam and the Muslims. We ask Allah to protect our maraja. We ask Him to protect our leader. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to protect all those that are helping the cause of Islam. We ask Him to forgive us all of our sins. We ask Him to relieve all the believers of the sufferings that they're going through, especially those in Yemen, in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Bahrain, in Burma, in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, wherever people and believers are suffering. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to relieve them all from that. Bin Nabiya wa Alih, Rahimallah man qara al-Fatihata ma'as-salawat.